You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at that website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for January 2nd, 2015. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the GOP's January White Sale, it's The Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal.
Sure, yeah. Seems like every January they're trying to sell us something white. I'm not going to say poor John Boehner. I'm just not going to say it. Steve Whip guy is...
Steve Scalzi.
I think he's going to get whipped. I think next week they're going to whip him right out of there. I do.
Yeah.
I think it's getting worse and worse. They're finding out all kinds of stuff. And even in Louisiana, it's bad.
Yeah. If I may quote Godfather 2, this is the work we've chosen, John Boehner. This is the party you chose, man. This is the people I'm not with.
You wanted this job.
It's not like it should come as a big surprise in 2015 that, hey, guess what? Mm-hmm. The number three ranking member of your party is a giant fucking racist. And he hung out with Klansmen. And he's friends with them. And they give him money.
They gave him $1,000. Yep.
And in New Orleans, it's not like this a big secret.
Yeah.
Dave Duke was and what he was up to. But I will say this, we've reached that point where the minute you heard this, the minute liberals heard this, everybody knew what the GOP was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Right down the line.
They were going to scream Jeremiah Wright at the top of their lungs.
They were going to go Jeremiah Wright, Robert Byrd, Jeremiah Wright, Robert Byrd, Louis Farrakhan, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, because Democrats are worse, you know, they're just worse. And there's a double standard. That's why the GOP has to live up to a higher standard because the liberal media bias.
There was actually an article that you showed me last night about the higher standard to which the GOP must live.
Oh, yes, yes.
And I'm glad I was lying down at the time because I think I'd have fallen over.
Well, the first of those two articles, actually, there were three different occasions where that happened. My blog, I get a little blog I do. I don't know if you know about it.
Called, I know what. I visit it every once in a while.
Go read my blog, honey. I pointed out that the Wingnuts have finally been able to afford that lean manufacturing thing to make their manufacturing process run really smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
Because it took less than 72 hours from this thing to pop. This, hey, guess what? Guess who talked to a David Duke crowd? Guess who's friends with actual Klansmen? From that moment to the manufacture and distribution of here's how we're going to fucking deal with this.
Mm-hmm.
We got really good at it. So this is what you will be hearing from your crazy Uncle Libby in your inbox in the next week or two or three if this comes up. And I give it to Charlie Pierce because Charlie Pierce pointed out in his blog on the 30th that it's a longer article that I could have written, and actually pretty much all liberal bloggers have written about this 20 or 30 times, which is modern conservatism will not acknowledge its own history, refuses to acknowledge where it came from, how it got to be where it is, will not even talk about the Southern strategy. And every time you bring this up to this party of lunatics and bigots and liars, the first words out of their mouth are going to be Robert Byrd.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Charlie pointed out on the 30th. You see this every time we are reminded that Robert Byrd was once belonged to the KKK. Boom. So what happens a day later? By Jiminy Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Over at the National Review, which I refer to, and I believe quite rightly, as America's white supremacist news rag of record.
Mm-hmm.
This is the magazine that kicked out two.
But was this National Review online?
No, this
or
is
was it the National Review magazine that has a website?
I think it's the National. I think they're the same thing, then.
Okay, but yeah, National Review Online, though, is hip and young and has actual internet people working for it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I tried to say that with a straight face.
No, they're both Rich Lowry's, you know.
Yeah, okay.
Shit house. Right. Yeah.
Well, I was thinking of Catherine Jean Lopez.
Yeah, I know she tries to. She prays over those poor raging idiots.
She's so hard. The mother bird to all of those conservative boys. She really is. Bless her.
No, so number one, which one are they going to haul out? Guess what? Yes, it's true. It's noted Democratic progressive leaders in the company of Louis Farrakhan. Apparently, there are thousands of photos. There are a bunch of photos of noted Democratic and progressive leaders in the company of Louis Farrakhan. Now, mind you, my commenters can't find any. But that doesn't mean that in the imagination of the kind of human trash that reads the National Review Online, they don't sort of remember somehow, kind of sort of remember maybe Bill Clinton and Ted Kennedy getting a back rub from Louis Farrakhan or something.
Okay.
I'm sure they do. I'm sure that's how their memory works. That's why we can't debate them anymore. Mm-hmm. So that's the National Review. Now, the National Review, I don't know if you know this, Blue Gal, National Review has a bastard stepchild.
Oh.
Called the Washington Examiner.
Yeah. Okay.
I believe their motto is potty reading for the world net daily crowd. And I mean that literally. They are, in fact, when they were created, their writers include Byron York of the National Review, Michael Barone, American Enterprise Institute, Fox News Channel, and David Frederoso, National Review, author of the case against Barack Obama. So it's literally the bastard abomination stepchild of the National Review. Mm-hmm. So the next day, what happens? Over there. Look over there. What Timothy Carney's writing in the Washington Examiner. Do Democrats get away with far worse? Of course they do. President Obama's longtime intimate relationship with hate-filled Reverend Jeremiah Wright. Blah, blah, blah. Next paragraph. Democrats were fine with KKK alumnus Robert Byrd. Blah, 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 blah. Absolutely predictable. 100% predictable. And to round out the field, bless her heart, Carolee at Crooks and Liars posted the headwaters where this is all coming from. The first cut at this was, of course, from Fox News.
Yeah.
Stephen Hayes, who's famous for being both an infamous liar, a Weekly Standard hack, one of the Iraq War architects, mm-hmm. and the official biographer for Dick Cheney. So he's got all that going for him.
Oh, my God.
He should be unemployable, and he should be driven from polite society or any society with torches mm-hmm. and pitchforks. Mm-hmm. Any society would drive a scumbag like this from their company and exile him from view. But Fox News gives him a job.
He's on the Fox News payroll, yeah.
Yes. And, of course, what does he say? There's a pretty clear media double standard here. I mean, you know, President Obama was listening to Reverend Wright for years, and we're off to the races. And it was absolutely predictable. This is where we live now in 2015. It isn't necessary to pay any attention to them anymore. It isn't necessary to listen to them or read their trash or watch them on television or listen to them on the radio. I do, because I like to keep tabs on them. But conservatives have let themselves become so robotized, so brainwashed, that every one of their reactions to everything that happens is now 100% predictable.
And you and I, when we look at this situation with the House Whip,
uh-huh.
or incoming House Whip, we are seeing unfolding in real time a plethora of evidence.
Yes.
That this guy spoke before a white supremacist group, took money from a David Duke organization. And this wasn't 30 years ago.
No. Nope.
And so we have this evidence is piling up.
And don't forget, he is also recorded as saying that the only problem with David Duke is bad press.
Yeah, well,
he likes his ideas. You know, he's just unelectable.
He also first thing he said was he compared it to the League of Women Voters.
Yes, which is a nice touch. Because you know why, Blue Gal? You know why?
Why?
Both sides. The first reaction of every one of these godforsaken scumbags is always going to be, well, some liberal out there did something bad, and therefore I don't have to take responsibility for the fact that I'm getting a reach around from a Klansman.
All right, but here's my point. First of all, there's a lot of evidence against the Klan. I don't have to mention that to our readers, but there's evidence that this guy was cozy with Klansmen. All right, now I get it that a Republican male, white male politician in Louisiana.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I get it that he thought he could get away with this.
Sure.
All right, so there's this evidence. The evidence against Jeremiah Wright is the same amount of evidence they have against Hillary Clinton on Benghazi.
Right.
It's one soundbite that someone clipped out of a speech.
Taken out of context.
Uh-huh. And plastered over Fox News.
It's the Dean scream.
That's it. Uh-huh. It's all they've got is goddamn America.
Right.
Which he was saying with a great deal of passion in an entire speech about 9/11.
And he was quoting someone else.
Else, yes.
Saying, this is what happens when America does things. This is this is what God... And this is... The thing is, this idea of God cursing America for doing a terrible thing, that these are our sins visited back on us, is exactly what every fucking evangelical right-wing nut job says every time there's a hurricane, every time there's
it's
a flood.
The gays. Well, and they were blaming 9/11 on the gays. Absolutely. They were, yeah.
And
Pat Robertson and...
Well, ever since Barack Obama was elected, every conservative has been saying, God damn America, God damn America. Mm-hmm. And so they take this one clip from this one guy, this one time, they play it over and over and over again. And suddenly it's an entire conspiracy. Three black guys at a voting booth. It's the entire new Black Panther Party. It's a massive conspiracy. Mm-hmm. Acorn and on and on and on. All they do is repeat the same lies over and over again, one-offs. Because they really believe there's a conspiracy out there.
Oh yeah.
And
Hagee, remember Hagee?
Yeah.
Remember when John McCain had to step away from John Hagee because he's nuts?
Yeah. So did
anyway.
I'm not trying
to outdo the conservatives that are reflexively bringing up people that are crazy on the other side.
No,
that would take 3 hours of podcast time that we don't have.
The point, I think a valid lesson to take away from this is you could chase the conservative down the Reverend Wright rabbit hole all you want. And you could point out to them that what they believe is simply not true.
It doesn't matter.
Not true. Then they will go to Robert Byrd. Mm-hmm. And then you could spend 3 hours talking about, you know, how that's not true. And Robert Byrd, by the way, repudiated it, ran away from it, gave up on it, and moved in the opposite direction as opposed to embracing them in the 2000s.
Yeah.
And that wouldn't matter either, because then they're going to go on to Louis Farrakhan. They'll go on to something else because they really believe that there's a massive conspiracy of Negroes and feminists and liberals who have somehow gotten into the White House and are actively working to destroy the country. And it doesn't matter how many different examples of their bullshit proof that you blow up in their face, they're going to go right onto the next one and the next one, the next one. And my personal experience is it literally doesn't matter if you spend years doing this. It doesn't matter. They're never going to give up their paranoid delusions.
Right, so, we need to switch gears here, Derek.
Okay, but stop doing it. Stop chasing them down the Robert Byrd rat hole.
We got to talk about Chuck Todd, who, as Wonkette pointed out, Chuck Todd, of all people, worried that comedy has dumbed down politics.
I know.
It's on his show, like Meet the Press, of all shows. Chuck Todd, of all people, went on Meet the Press, of all shows, to ask Louis Black, of all people, whether his comedy is somehow making people more cynical about politics in Washington.
Louis Black, I'd like to ask you, Jonathan Swift and Mark Twain, is comedy making people stupid?
No, is making people stupid.
Fortunately, they were able to winkle Chuck Todd into telling the truth about his job. And here's the quote. They were talking about barking. Louis Black said, "You are lied to on your show and you don't push back. You don't bark."
What he said was, it would drive him crazy. He said, if I had these people to deal with, you're so calm and you're this and this. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If I had to deal with them, I would just bark at them. Mm-hmm. And Chuck Todd said,
quote, "We all sit there because we all know the first time we bark is the last time that they do the show. You say something and sometimes it is the last time they will ever come on your show. There is that balance."
Right.
At which point W. Kamau Bell pointed out that Fox News still barks. They bark all the time.
Yep. And I defy you to find me one Democrat who has ever said, "I ain't going on Meet the Press because they'll be too hard on me. It'll be too tough. The grilling I'll be taking." Who has ever? This is the thing. Again, borrowing from Charlie Pierce, obvious anagram, Reince Priebus has said, I think it was after the some NBC intern tweeted something.
Oh, yeah. He was threatening to pull all Republicans off of NBC. Yeah.
And when Mitt Romney was running, his press people made it clear that he's only doing Fox News.
Right.
Republicans have their own media universe. They don't need MSNBC. They don't need, I'm sorry, NBC. They don't need any of these shows. They have their own self-contained, completely internally consistent media bubble that was created for them by Roger Ailes. And they can go in that bubble as long as they play by Roger Ailes' rules. They can lie every fucking day of their lives.
The problem is they'll only get about 38% of the electorate doing that.
Yeah, well,
if they want to be on the national stage, that won't work for them. That will work for them in winning Republican primaries, but it will not work for them winning a national election. And I guess.
So?
I guess I do want to say Rock Dots on Twitter pointed out that, you know, I don't bark. I'm a lap dog.
Yeah.
But well, Chuck Todd did fulfill our destiny this week. I think we should point that out and be appreciative.
He did.
Of that. And thank you to everyone who sent that to us. We saw it and realized that, you know, 3 days after Christmas, this is the only thing that basically went on the Sunday shows.
Yeah.
Apart from a plane crash that was it.
And I'll say that Tom Hartman, to his credit, I mean, Tom Hartman does a lot of things on his show that annoy the hell out of me. But one thing he is very consistent about, and I agree with because it agrees with what I believe, is his insistence. In fact, he said it this week, he was going through the most underreported stories of the year. And he said, basically, the press covering the fact the Republican Party has lost its mind is the most underreported story of the decade. They just won't talk about it. They just won't. And the most underreported story, I think it was a little unfair because only a few days had gone past, was Chuck Todd saying, the reason we don't ask Republicans hard questions. And he said guests, but it's only Republicans.
It is. It's only everyone knows it's only Republicans.
And that's why you lard up your panel with Harold Ford Jr.'s. Because, you know, he's just going to sit there and say, my good friend, Newt Gingrich.
That's why you don't have Joan Walsh or Rachel Maddow on the Sunday shows often at all.
No. And when you do, you clearly put a leash on them. I mean, you can just see them biting through their tongue saying things sometimes because you're not allowed to say certain things. But the reason they have lapdog centrists and conservatives on those shows is precisely because Chuck Todd is dedicated. And here's the thing. Chuck Todd does not understand. This is why he's beyond hope also. Chuck Todd doesn't understand why that's a bad thing.
I know. I know. Yeah, he doesn't understand that that's not your job. No. Your job is to find the truth, and your job is to point out when someone's lying to you, that is someone wiping their ass on your network when they lie to you. And he doesn't get that. He just seems to think that making everyone happy, every guest happy on your show, that's his job. Yeah. And it's not his job to report whether someone's lying or not. That's your job as the viewer to figure out whether they're lying, which is atrocious. It's atrocious.
Uh-huh. Well, and before him, David Gregory did the same thing. Let's be clear about that. There's one place where Mr. Pierce and I have a parting of the ways, and that's he says, look to the Saturday and Sunday offerings on MSNBC to see what this could be. You could have state officials, policy experts, et cetera, talking extensively and passionately about subjects of deep interest. And I agree that that is true of Melissa Harris Perry, but unfortunately, Charlie, if you want to talk about the Sunday, the Saturday and Sunday Up show, you got to begin that sentence with "Once Upon a Time," because ever since Chris Hayes left that spot, it's been turned into a Meet the Press Junior.
It's more of a poll reading show, and that's unfortunate.
But on that show, you will find American Enterprise liars.
Yeah.
Being unchallenged, you'll find conservatives.
Well, and MHP has had to do that lately too.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's a lot of pressure from upstairs for them to have both sides on.
The ratings are terrible.
Yeah.
You know, MSNBC has really dropped like a rock, and it's a tragedy because really the only place, you know, you and I used to make it a thing.
Oh, it was appointment television when Chris Hayes was on Saturday morning. Absolutely.
And it's become
nice Twitter community, and I really miss it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
We got to move on to Bible Bitch.
Bible Bitch.
That's not scriptural.
Our church is reading the Bible in a year, and it's nice how they're going about it. It's broken up into sections, and so on Monday you will read something from the first three chapters, and then on Tuesday something from the next three chapters or five chapters or whatever. And so you get, by Wednesday or Thursday, you're reading something from Psalms. By Saturday, you're reading a gospel and then the epistles and prophecies at the end of the week. And so, you do get through the Bible, but you're not stuck for a month in Leviticus, which, no. or 2 weeks in Leviticus, which...
Or, you know, knee deep in Begats, you know?
Right, right. It makes it a little easier to get through it. And there's a chart that we can follow. And if anybody's interested, just email me at bluegoushblog@gmail.com. I'll be glad to hook you up. But this week, we were reading Genesis 1 through 3, and I'm reading... it from several translations, but in particular, one of my favorite translations, as I've mentioned many times, is The Message. And I found it fascinating that the word that is usually translated dominion, as in God gave man dominion over the fish of the sea and the fowl of the air and the every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. This particular translation used the word responsibility. God gave man responsibility over the fish of the sea and the fowl of the air and every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth. And I wanted to connect that also to the Pope on climate change. He's going to release an encyclical on climate change, which is going to be terrific, I think, and unwavering in terms of our responsibility, as this Bible verse is translated, toward the earth. And so I've been thinking a lot about that in relation to Twitter and how Fox News failed in their hashtag of being...
That's a hard jump right there.
No, it's not, because so over it 2014, the example that Fox News used was, I'm so over it, all these attacks on Christianity. And I, you know, and here's the bottle blondes on Fox all... you know, in a huff about people just attack Christianity and it's so wrong. And anytime a bottle blonde on Fox says they're tired of attacks on Christianity, they really have forgotten that our Savior was crucified by a racial majority grand jury.
Right.
And
right. In public.
In public.
Right.
I mean, what you really think that, we're supposed to be at the head of the table. Didn't Jesus say something about that?
If only he'd respected their authority. Really. You know, if only he'd done what the Knights officers told him to do and respected their authority, then we'd be fine.
Yeah.
But no, he wouldn't do that, did he? Because he's dangerous.
Because he's, you know, he held up his hands and said, don't shoot. And look what happened.
You know how those people are.
Oh, right? Lord. Yeah. But I've been thinking a lot about that, and also about how Martin Luther King Jr. Didn't argue for radical change in the way America presented itself.
No.
He argued for America to live up to its ideals and to live up to the Constitution live up to equality for all, because the Constitution promises that. And so the way I look at this now, And the mission of Bible Bitch, if you want to put it that way, I want to give everyone vocabulary, whether you're a believer or not, whether you have any religious faith or not, because that doesn't matter to me. But I want to provide vocabulary to hold Christians accountable for what they say they believe. And so there is such an urgency, I think, to point out the difference between Christianity and Christendom.
Yeah.
Christendom is Western white civilization. That's the idea that Christianity is America. It's Sarah Palin.
And proud of it.
And proud of it. Huh? The red, white, and blue and the Bible are interlinked.
Yeah.
And the founding fathers and the apostles are the same people. I mean, you get this blurring.
On purpose, which is...
On purpose, absolutely. It's a cultural hegemony. It is absolutely a cultural hegemony.
It's sacrilegious and idolatry at the same time.
Exactly. So. And it's against the Constitution, as our friends at Americans United for Separation of Church and State are constantly pointing out. It really goes against the Constitution and the Bible at the same time. So, really, we need to get to the difference between the faith that is promulgated in Christian scripture and this idea that, oh, well, no, I'm white and I'm Christian and I'm American and God bless America, because America is the greatest because of God and the Bible. Those two things are in conflict with each other. And so we're going to be talking more and more about this in the coming year.
My word for these people is Christopath. My faith's better than yours. But my faith is, here's the problem, it's very inconvenient because my faith is built on top of yours. So you have this inherent conflict in Christianity of our faith is the fulfillment of an older faith, Jewish faith. We need them to be right in their prophecy, and we are infuriated by the fact they don't see things our way.
Well, this is what Bill Maher constantly points out, which is Jews have a choice. They can convert to Christianity or spend eternity in hell, you know? And this is why Sarah Palin has a flag of Israel hanging in her house, is because believing that Israel somehow fulfills Christian prophecy is central to their foreign policy. I mean, it's so
sick.
It's weird. And I find it even more sick that they think drill baby drill is fulfilling.
See, here's the thing.
Genesis.
Back when I was at Yearly Coast, when it was turning into Netroots Nation in Chicago, I went to a panel on faith and religion. And some very good scholars there pointed out that the conservatives are inventing a new faith and inventing a new religion right in front of you. It's not Christian at all. It borrows some of the tropes, but it has nothing to do with Christianity. It is a completely consumerist, prosperity-driven new religion. And they put it in mega churches, and they serve cappuccino, and they promise you happiness and wealth. And it has nothing whatsoever to do with Christianity. Except they need it to be. So I would argue that there is a brand new religion, the sort of constitutional conservatism, that needs to supersede Christianity. It needs it to be true. So they can talk about how blessed and holy they are and how the rest of us fucking hippies are all going to burn in hell. But they also need to ignore massive portions of their own scriptures that tells them specifically, no, you're doing it all wrong.
Right.
You cannot hate.
We're only judged by how you behave toward the poor. Yep.
And on and on and on. I mean, every lesson that you could draw, you know, take all the miracles out of the Bible. I'm with Thomas Jefferson on this. I don't need miracles. Take all of the moral lessons of the New Testament. Every single one of them is a slap in the face to modern conservatives. Every one of them. Every single one of them disproves radically what they're talking about. There's no compatibility between Ayn Rand and Christianity. Ayn Rand says that. She says her mission is to destroy Christianity. That the collectivists, you know, the horrible people who want to raise taxes to pay for shit are equally awful to one other group, and those are the spiritualists. So you cannot be a Randite and a Christian. You cannot be a conservative and actually believe the Bible. So my contention has been for a long time, this is a cult. This is a religious cult. It's built on some of the vocabulary they stole from my religion, but it's nothing to do with my faith. These are not Christians. They're some awful bastardized hybrid of the Koch brothers and the Randites and the pig ignorance of the evangelicals.
And Mike Finnegan calls them Christianists.
Yeah,
that's ISTS. And you know, the Christianist religion, every time you see a Pharisee in the Bible, that's who we're talking about.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, Jesus had to deal with this. This is nothing new. There's nothing new under the sun when it comes to schism and people attempting, human beings attempting to save just enough materialism to keep themselves on top of the heap. I mean, my dad always said that man invented heaven so that his enemies would go the other direction. So,
yeah.
I want to talk for a minute about social media.
Yeah.
Do you know how new social media is, Driftglass? When you and I started blogging, there was no Twitter. There was no YouTube, for heaven's sake.
Yep.
There was no I don't know if there was Facebook or not. I think it was just starting, maybe.
Yeah.
It was done by very few people.
It was crude. I was actually, this is always makes people laugh. I was an early adopter. I had a black and white or green and black CrackBerry.
Yeah. And you didn't have a cell phone.
No.
Till you and I started long distance dating. And then I got you one because I didn't want you on a leash, Driftglass. I just wanted to be able to reach you. That's different. That's private. That's personal.
Absolutely. Here we
are. I didn't want to go in that direction. I actually wanted to talk about human nature and social media and how many of you know I'm an alumna of Brandeis University, which has had their own little explosion. And of course, because it's within the Brandeis community, it's huge. I don't know if anyone else has noticed. one student at Brandeis posted something to social media about killing cops.
Yes.
And, you know, we could spend a lot of time analyzing what men under a certain age do and why they are made into soldiers and why their frontal lobe isn't always fully connected to the rest of their brain.
No.
But it was done rashly, I believe. And apparently then this comment, as it was published as being a Brandeis student who had done this, it got pasted to other websites, or at least one other website, where, shall we say, donors to the university or the donor class of the university might see it. And that caused the president of the university to write a letter and an email to the entire Brandeis alums group, including me. And there were just a couple sentences in this letter that I thought were kind of interesting. I wanted to share them with everyone.
All right.
He said, "A group of Brandeis students has been urging that this discussion of this whole issue transition away from social media, where the lack of face-to-face interaction, the instant ability to post, and the brevity of posts can enable destructive language, and transition instead into settings based on direct human connection and into more rational forms of expression. I, meaning the president of the university, support these students' efforts to make this discourse shed less heat and more light. Uh-huh. In the new year, we plan a forum for respectful dialogue on these issues." So I just found that to be an interesting dichotomy, that somehow you actually need to move away from social media in order to have light rather than heat. And my sense is that we're moving away from anonymity towards places where we require people to show themselves. Now, I say that knowing that some people are going to say, but wait a minute, Driftglass is anonymous.
Ruh-roh.
You and I talked about that this week.
Yeah.
There's a huge difference between someone punching and running in a Twitter, in a tweet or in a Facebook post, and being completely anonymous, and uh-huh. someone who has a blog that has comment threads, that has email published, that is completely accessible, has made himself available online as having a single address that everyone can reach him.
Mm-hmm.
I consider you, Driftglass, to be a pseudonym, not anonymous.
Exactly.
And
it's
so
nom de guerre.
It is. And so There's that point. The second point is that we need to continually remind ourselves how new social media is.
Yeah.
And I do see a future where having your phone in front of you all the time becomes like having a cigarette. It just becomes kind of rude.
So
and
cool? You mean cool?
No, I don't mean
no?
cool.
Oh, okay. All right.
I mean, we've already seen a reaction to Google Glass, where people just think it's awful that you have a camera on, you could possibly have a camera on people all the time.
Yep.
So I think this is evolving, and it may turn into a dichotomy where we just say, yes, you have to take full responsibility for everything you type in social media. And if we expect a conversation to have less heat and more light, it won't take place on social media. But we're still working all those things out. And the thing that we can count on is human nature. Speaking of New York, we want to say rest in peace, Mario Cuomo, who passed away. We just found out like half an hour ago that he passed away.
Yeah, we're doing
82.
This on Thursday.
Yeah.
And I think one of the defining speeches of our generation was his 1984 convention speech. It was remarkable. It was poetry. It was beautiful. I bought copies of his books. I wish he'd run for president.
It was poetry, but it was also policy. And I think that's something that we need to get back to. I noticed that Bernie Sanders has published a 12-point policy directive of 12 things we can actually do.
In haiku?
To improve the economy. Not that any of this will get done under this Congress, but it's important for us to stand for something. And we get caught up a lot in, you know, how did the right wing get outraged this week and how ridiculous it is?
Yeah.
And then we forget that the Republican Party voted against equal pay.
Yeah.
The Republican Party voted against a raise in the minimum wage. And so those are things that actually are issues and they matter. And if we don't stick to those things and stick to our guns about how can we, I mean, we didn't get to the issue of fixing poverty, which was something I wanted to talk about this week, but maybe next week we can talk about. There was an article in These Times magazine called We Forgot to Fix Poverty. Mm-hmm. And it's really important that we fix poverty. Mm-hmm. And if we don't focus on that and talk about that, we should be talking about that every week. I don't mind if a Democrat wants to go in front of a microphone and say, by the way, the party that is defending torture and defending the Klan and voted against equal pay and voted against increasing the minimum wage also doesn't want to fix poverty. But every week in front of the microphone, that's what should be said. We have solutions that we would like to try to fix the problem of poverty, and they are stopping it.
And let me just say, this is also repetitive, but I think it's equally important. The reason that you can't get in front of a microphone, every week and say that, is because you're not allowed to.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are guardians at the gates, there are guardians at television, there's guardians in the newspaper, there's guardians who will not let you come on and say, the problem with poverty, the problem with minimum wage, the problem with unemployment, the problem with veterans issues, the problem with the environment is one party is blocking everything because they're bad people.
And the reason you can't do that is because of money.
Right.
Every reporter sitting in a press conference who is sitting there next to or in the same room with a Fox News reporter pretending like they are equally valid members of that community is a sellout.
Yes.
So we need to say that.
And we do.
And I do. But Chuck Todd is a sellout because he treats Fox News as if they are an equal competitor. We have to keep up with them because ratings and money and advertising dollars.
And because he treats the patently insane positions of the Republican Party as just another point of view.
Mm-hmm.
We here, without funding, without a microphone other than the one we have in our bedroom.
It was provided by a listener.
Provided by a listener. We, without any resources, are stuck not just with the job about talking about policy, but with the job of correcting Chuck Todd for the record, even though there is no record.
Mm-hmm.
So we shouldn't have to correct the media. We shouldn't have to be the corrective for the people who are constitutionally charged with telling us the truth. That shouldn't be our job. It's insane that that's our job, but that is our job. So in addition to talking about policy and poverty and religion and those things, we apparently are also now in charge of pushing back against Chuck Todd. And I think it's an unfair fight, but we've been doing it for 5 years now, and we'll do it for another five.
Yeah, I think so.
Until something comes along, but the boulder in the stream. The stream is what we should be talking about,
mm-hmm.
but the boulder in the stream has to be removed or nothing gets done. And that's where I do feel the weight of repeating the same message over and over again every week, because I don't want to bore people, but it really is true. There is a blockage in the artery of our democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And until we get it the hell out of the way, nothing you want, nothing I want is going to get done.
Excuse me. I think the next Democratic candidate for president needs to ask, I hate to use the term the American people because there is no such thing, but needs to ask the electorate, are you sick of being poor?
Yeah.
Are you tired of your current economic condition? And why are you in that condition? And the problem is that there are a few Democratic candidates who are so in bed with Wall Street that they can't really say that. And I'm really worried about that. All right, we have to stop.
We must stop, Blue Gal.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is Aranita, which means Sandy. Aranita's human rights. I was watching a program about the Caribbean coast of Central America, and some sandpipers caught Aranita's attention. The program held her interest long enough to pose in front of this orca whale. So you will see on our website and Facebook page, there is Aranita in front of the television, and on the television is an orca whale. And I know orcas are a mammal, but our cats always say, fish and birds on the TV.
Wait a minute. See, this is just a sneaky way of sliding in more Bible bitch stuff about the fish of the sea and the fowl of the air. Yeah.
See, the internet kitties know who has dominion over the fish on the TV.
Yeah.
Our cats like the fish on the TV. Yes, they do. All right. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. And I want to say a special shout out to people who can only afford to send us one $5 contribution. You guys pay our electric bill.
You guys are amazing.
So we totally understand that what you are doing when you send us a one-time $5 contribution, because that's the best you can do,
is a sacrifice.
Is a sacrifice, and we appreciate it so much. Those of you that are in that position, we understand. We have been there, and we appreciate every contribution we get, no matter what. But those of you that can only afford to give one time, and you give $5 because you want to give us a vote of confidence, and that's what you want to do, is just say, I listen every week. I appreciate it. This is the best I can do. We want you to know how much we appreciate you. You guys pay our electric bill, and we appreciate it so much. Thank you.
Now, let me be very clear. If you'd like to give a lot more than that, we will not stare at you. We will not laugh at you. We will not say no. We're happy to do that.
Well, we do have very generous contributors who send us money, and people have been generous at Christmas time, and we appreciate it. But I don't want anyone to feel that, first of all, if you're in the military or you're just unable, you don't buy yourself espresso-based beverage ever because you can't afford it. This podcast is our gift to you. Absolutely, you are under no obligation to donate. But and some people do donate more, and we love all our donors. But I don't want anyone to feel discouraged, like their $5 won't make a difference. It really does, and we appreciate you so much. Please rate our show on iTunes and Stitcher Radio, and thank you for doing that. Be aware, if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service Go Postal Union's letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. So, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Galley, internet kitties cannot believe it took Fox News this long to blame the metric system.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovin'. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2015, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Hey, Driftglass, we got a few answers in various locations for Science Fiction University.
Yeah, a lot of stuff got thrown over the transom. And that's fine.
That's fine. This was fun.
It's a social media world, and so you're a lot of information through a lot of sources. One thing I did not do was publish the comments I got with guesses, because, you know, we told people, I think we said, don't do that.
We did, and I didn't either, so but we didn't do that. But hey, we got the answers now.
And here's the thing. Some people did send me snail mail addresses, but if you drop me a comment or if you drop me an email address.
People have to provide you with a U.S. Postal Service address if they want a postcard.
Go Postal Unions.
Yeah.
If you want a postcard, you're going to have to. I'm going to grade on a really low curve because apparently this was a very hard quiz.
This was hard.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm going to read the questions and you're going to read the answers. Is that all right?
That is correct. You are correct.
All right. So let's get started.
Happy New Year.
Hey, Happy New Year, everybody. We're going to get to that in a minute.
Yeah.
All right. Science Fiction University. Here we go. Here are the questions as provided last week.
Yes.
Number one, in which science fiction short story is Santa Claus really a James Bond-like secret agent? Who was the author of the story? And what was the name of at least one villain from the story? Bonus point for knowing the greeting between employees of Santa's workshop. And at this point, I want to say that Kevin Holtzinger said it was the spy who loved me in space. Wrong.
No, we love you anyway, but no, you're wrong. I got many interesting answers. A couple of people got this right off the bat, which is truly impressive. The story is called Santa Claus versus Spider.
Ooh, and Spider is initials.
Yes.
Like it's, uncle, right? Yes. Yeah.
And as I recall, I haven't read the story in a long time, but the our hero tries to figure out what Spider stands for the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
And he keeps coming up with different possible meanings for the acronyms. And the story was written in 1968 by Harlan J. Ellison, by the inimitable Harlan J. Ellison. And since, you know, if you know Harlan Ellison, you probably know who the villains were if it was written in 1968. They were Ronald Reagan, Lyndon Johnson, Richard Nixon, Hubert Humphrey, Richard Daley, George Wallace, Lester Maddox, and Spiro Agnew.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. The Rogues Gallery. They were the people who were enthralled to an alien force, and they were all trying really hard to destroy the country.
Wow.
And by Jiminy, he got them all right. I mean, he certainly named off the people I would put down as villains or accomplices or feckless.
And Spiro Agnew is my favorite thing to throw up when you're playing Hangman, because nobody ever gets it. Spiro Agnew.
Yeah.
The vowels are in all the wrong places, so.
And the bonus answer is no war toys. No war toys. At Santa's workshop, it's peace on Earth and no war toys.
Wow.
So, as I recall.
All right. How about number two? This one was, the easiest one of the 10. I really do.
Because it's so bad. Everyone knows it.
And it was an MST3K movie, so yeah. What 1964 Christmas science fiction movie disaster is always a fan favorite at conventions? Hint, Pia Zadora.
It's Santa Claus Conquers the Martians.
Yeah.
Of course. Just awful. It's awful on every level. It's just bad all the way across the board. And I highly recommend it for 2 a.m. with friends having a drinking game. It's the perfect antidote to, Interstellar. You filled your heads with deep and important thoughts about nature and God and the universe and infinity. And sit down with this. It'll flush it right out of your skull.
All right. Number three, we had a lot of different answers for this one.
We did. Yes.
But there is a definitive answer to this question. What dystopian science fiction movie is conspicuously set in the lead up to Christmas?
And the answer is Brazil.
Brazil. That's right.
It's not part of the background noise. Nobody just mentions in passing, hey, it's Christmas. People are shopping for gifts. Gifts are exploding. It's very clear. There's lights up. There's Christmas music. It's very clear that this is the consumer time of year. This is set during Christmas for a reason. So
Terry Gilliam. All right.
Bless his heart.
Bless his heart. Uh-huh. Number four. In a Ray Bradbury short story, a young boy's parents are worried that travel regulations will make their son's Christmas suck. But the young boy gets a most unexpected Christmas present. What is the name of the story, and what present does the boy receive?
And the name of the story is The Gift, and the gift the boy gets is to see billions of stars through the portal.
Ah.
He gets to see raw space, big, infinite, empty space, billions of stars blinking in space. I'd like to put a brief aside here. I did invite Paul Krugman, who wrote the new foreword to the Foundation Trilogy, to participate in this quiz. And like most other emails I've sent to Paul Krugman, it came back unanswered. But if you'd like to, Paul, you know, you're always welcome to drop in, comment. I know that
you can be on our podcast anytime. I'll edit you down and make you sound good.
Yeah, well, he tosses a link
to
Duncan.
How hard can it be?
He tosses a link to Duncan Black and Digby every now
every
and then.
Every 5 minutes,
does
yes,
it,
okay.
Does it, would it kill you, Paul? I'm just saying, would it kill you? All right.
All right, number five. In an Arthur C. Clarke short story, a Jesuit priest's faith is sorely tested by a tragic discovery. What is the name of the story, and what does the priest discover?
Yeah, Arthur Clarke has really good twist endings.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, the story is called The Star, surprise, surprise, and it's a supernova which destroyed the advanced civilization they were sent to investigate. Turned out it's also the Star of Bethlehem.
Oh.
So the Star of Bethlehem that lit the way for the wise men also wiped out a really advanced noble civilization for no particularly good reason. So that makes our Jesuit priest, and Arthur Clarke does that fairly regularly. He puts a religious character in some of his stories to stand in there and talk about God, which I appreciate.
All right, number six. Mm-hmm. Had the internet existed in 1978 when this successful film franchise spawned one of the most universally hated holiday specials of all time, it might have doomed the career of B. Arthur, among others. What was the film franchise, and what was the name of the fictional holiday the awful, awful show purported to celebrate? Now, I know the first part, but I didn't know what the second part was.
Yeah.
This is that Star Wars Christmas special.
Yeah.
B. Arthur. Yeah.
Star Wars Life Day.
Life Day. And,
oh, God. It was so bad. It was.
I think I'd rather watch Santa Claus Conquers the Martian, because at least that's camp, you know?
Yeah,
I don't think Star Wars Christmas special has risen to the level of camp.
No, they were very earnest. And thank God for the internet today, because videotape of it still exists, and you can't go out to YouTube and look it up and look upon the horror with your own
for
eyes.
Just a few minutes. I don't think you could watch the whole thing.
And when you look at it, remember, someone approved this.
Yeah.
Somewhere along the line, a committee of people, an individual, something like that, looked at the script, looked at it and said, yes, this is an excellent idea. Let's throw B. Arthur and a bunch of other characters into this mess and make a Christmas special out of a Star Wars movie. So
somebody greenlighted the Paul Lind Halloween special too, though. So
I would have
there was
that.
A lot of really bad television in the 70s.
I would have absolutely greenlit the Paul Lind
Halloween special.
Halloween special. I would have absolutely. Oh. I don't care what happens. I want Paul Lind talking about Halloween on television.
Okay.
I probably would have changed the script, but Paul Lind, highly underrated, venomous
comedian. Yeah.
Snarky. Really, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Number seven. What famous writer of science fiction, including a rarely seen A Carol for Another Christmas, was born on Christmas Day?
And I worded this specifically writer of science fiction because it's Rod Serling. Mm-hmm. It's the amazing Rod Serling who wrote more than half of the episodes of The Twilight Zone, which is quite definitely science fiction, and wrote a bunch of other science fiction stories. He's a very good science fiction writer. You just don't think of him like that. You think of him as the host of the show, the producer of the show, but he's a writer and a really good writer, and he wrote a lot of science fiction, including 7 Days in May, which at the time was, in fact, science fiction.
Number eight, and this is a book that I actually read.
Yes.
And it was made into a movie, and your question is about the movie. What science fiction movie is centered around the need to protect the miraculous pregnancy of an unwed mother from a violent world?
And the answer is Children of Men.
By P.D. James.
Yeah.
Yeah, the mystery writer.
Although based on a suggestion from someone who shall remain nameless, I'm looking at you, Kevin, I would also accept The Terminator. Made a really good argument that a time loop is a great way to miraculously impregnate a woman whose son will then go on to cause his own conception.
No, I would accept that too. I would accept that answer. Yeah.
That was a clever answer and
very
it's
clever answer. Yeah.
Worth accepting.
Yep. Uh-huh. Yep. Number nine. In what TV series do Desmond and Penny finally connect via telephone on Christmas Eve?
It was, in fact, Green Acres.
No, it wasn't. Big Bang Theory either, although there is a Penny in Big Bang Theory.
Yes. No, it was Lost.
Which
became less and less science fiction-y and more off the rails. There was a moment they shared on Christmas Eve, and I thought, throw it in there, because I didn't have a whole lot of contemporary televised science fiction in here. So there you go. I thought it was
there
only
you go. And that made 10 questions, so that's good.
Exactly. I padded it.
All right, number 10. What author contracted with Scribner's for 12 years to produce a new juvenile novel each year for the Christmas season?
A lot of people got this. I think they got it because of Juvenile.
Yeah.
Robert Heinlein. Robert Heinlein was famous for his juvenile novels.
Mm-hmm.
Novels for young men, mostly. Young men usually in Boy Scouts. But they were very good. And they really did advance his career. And then he went on to write more grown-up stuff. But, it was Bob Heinlein who didn't write Christmas novels specifically, but wrote them for release and sale during the Christmas season.
All right.
Well, now, thank you all for participating.
Thank you very much. Science Fiction University will continue next week.
And I'm going to give everybody who sent in more
any
than
any answer, yes,
three good, what, two or three correct answers out of 10. I'm grading a nice low curve, but you got to send me an address to send them to. So, yeah. And no post dating, no past posting. You can't say, yeah, I wrote them all down. I just didn't mail them in. No, you have to have sent them in by today.
Mm-hmm.
So, but send me an address and I'll send you a postcard. I'm not sure what it'll be though. I think we have some My Little Pony postcards around here somewhere.
I think we have some Humphrey Bogart postcards.
Really? Okay.
Maybe. Well, yeah.
I'll look around. I no longer have access to the funky postcard place that I used to have in Chicago where you could get weird postcards. Uncle Fun, I believe it was called.
Oh, Uncle Fun.
On Belmont, which is a blast. But I'll do what I can.
And thank you everybody.
This was fun to do.
Happy New Year. We love you. Bye.
Bye.